Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sumi Terry, the Senior Research Scholar at the Weatherhead East Asia Institute at Columbia University and the Managing Director at Gerson Global Advisors. Previously, she was a National Intelligence Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, the former Deputy National Intelligence Officer for East Asia at the National Intelligence Council, and the Director of Japan, Korea, and Oceanic Affairs at the National Security Council. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sumi Terry.
Thank you.
And do you think that the young leader, Kim Jong-un, and the propaganda machine in North Korea is sort of digging a hole, a rhetorical hole, if you will, for the North, in as much as their rhetoric has gotten so bellicose, where they're threatening the United States, Guam, South Korea? They just cut off the hotline between North and South Korea. They've talked about demanding that the islands that they shelled the last time get evacuated, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, at what point does Kim Jong-un have to deliver to his own people on his rhetoric?
So that is my concern. He has to deliver now. And if you look at his North Korea's past record, when they talk like this, this much of a rhetoric, they always delivered. So that is my concern, although I do not think that Kim Jong-un, unlike maybe Dennis Rodman is, but Kim Jong-un is not suicidal, and I don't think that he's looking to really escalate to the point of no return. He knows that general war means the end of his regime. But the concern is, because he will have to follow through with some sort of provocative action, such as maybe another nuclear test, or some sort of limited and controlled and calculated attack, such as Chonan or Yeonpyeong Island shelling that happened in 2010, I believe. But the problem is that this time, South Korea has to respond. South Korea is not the same anymore. Even though they didn't really respond to Chonan, in the aftermath of Yeonpyeong Island attack in 2010, it has to respond. So my concern is, there's always that potential for things to escalate beyond what either North Korea or South Korea intends or want to do.
Well, obviously, the disparity here is the fact that the South has so much more to lose than the North, in the sense that it's a modern industrial society and Seoul is within artillery distance of the DMZ, and North Korea is a kind of time warp kind of society with lots of tunnels and paranoia and war preparation around the clock. That's not to suggest that there's any difference between the lives of North Koreans and South Koreans, but what makes you think that the South has to retaliate? Is it to do with the new leader in the South? Because when I talk to a lot of specialists on South Korea and on the Korean Peninsula, they tell me that in South Korea itself, there's a big constituency that doesn't believe its own government and is not entirely unsympathetic to the North.
That is absolutely right. I mean, you're right in so many, all of your points. South Korea has a lot more to lose. And South Korean public, there's a lot of people that's more empathetic to North Korea. But the problem is, South Korea has never responded. Not really. Remember when North Koreans blew up South Korean civilian airliner, killing hundreds of people? When North Korea blew up half of South Korean cabinet in Burma, in Rangoon? All these actions, South Korea did not really respond. And that's what North Koreans are banking on. However, in the aftermath of the Yeonpyeong Island shelling in 2010, which unfolded in front of all the people's eyes, public's eyes, because it unfolded in the television, unlike the Chonan incident,
the warship.
Feels like, yeah, there has to be some sort of response, that it has shifted, that you cannot just continually not respond in any kind of way. Now, Parkune, the President Park, and South Korean public knows that they don't want to really escalate. So they are also going to do something that's also limited and controlled, eye to eye, so not to really provoke North Korea. So in the end, if you ask me which way I'm going to bet that North Korea is going to do something limited and controlled and calculated, and so is South Korea, and then everyone's going to try to get back to talks, and things will be fine. But still, you cannot bank on that, because then you still can't ignore that possibility something could still escalate out of what people want to do or intend to do. So that is my concern.
What about the, by the way, the warship, the Chunan is the warship that was torpedoed, the assumption
right.
is. Now, what about the nuclear element? Has that changed the equation? Is the South in any way deterred, the idea that the North may have a deliverable nuclear weapon?
No, is South Korea deterred by deliverable? No, it's because conventional weapons, it's not that North Korea is going to really ever use nuclear weapons against South Korea. I don't think South Korean public believes that. And if North Korea really intended to do so, it could attack South Korea by conventional attack, and it could really hurt South Korean. South Korea. I mean, it's just a very small country. Both North and South Koreas are very, very small. So it could do a similar kind of damage with just conventional weapons alone. It's just that, as you said earlier, South Korea has a lot to lose, so they don't want to escalate. But they also have gotten to the point where they feel like if doing nothing, you have to still respond in some way. And Park Geun-hye, President Park, promised that she will respond. Now, again, I'm sure the Blue House is meeting right now, going over all possible scenarios, and we'll try to do something very limited and symbolic. And most likely, things will turn out okay. I don't think it will lead to a general war. However, there is still that possibility. So I'm just not discounting the possibility that things could escalate out of control.
Again, I'm speaking with Sumi Terry, who's a senior research scholar at the Weatherhead East Asia Institute at Columbia University and the managing director of Gerson Global Advisors. Previously, she was a National Intelligence Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and the former Deputy National Intelligence Officer for East Asia at the National Intelligence Council and the Director of Japan, Korea, and Oceanic Affairs at the National Security Council. So, from what you're telling us, Sumi Terry, in the ideal world, or almost in a kind of movie fantasy world, the North and the South could meet together in secret and agree upon what kind of kabuki theater war they could have. You know?
That's good way of putting it.
And then we could all sort of breathe a sigh of relief. But the problem is that the North, even if it's going to do something limited to realize its threats, to make good on its threats, and that the South is going to do something because they feel they have to do something. We don't know what this will be, and it's very hard to fight limited wars.
That's exactly right, and you put it very, very nicely. But this is why I think most Korea watchers tend to now agree. If you have to choose between the two incidents of Cheonan, where they sank the South Korean ship, and Yeonpyeong incident, they will do something more stealthy and sneaky like Cheonan attack, meaning that it took a while for the international community to figure out that it was really North Korea. So when North Koreans do something like this, stealthy naval attack, for example, and it takes more time for the world to find out that it was North Korea, then this creates a built-in sort of cooling off period, right? They will work towards North Korea's advantage. And it lessens the chance of a disproportionately large strike or response by South Korea. So I think they're going to be creative and come up with something like this. So I thought initially when we heard about the cyber attack and so on in South Korea, I thought, oh, maybe that's a potential possibility. But they will do something. We just don't know exactly what.
Well, there was, of course, a picture released by North Korea's propaganda ministry of Kim Jong-un inspecting military drills along with the Korean People's Army. There were Navy officers standing next to him. So, I mean, obviously,
right.
That's not evidence, but...
No, but it definitely shows something. Now, I just wanted to comment. As for timing, it took the North about 4 months to make good on its promise to avenge the 2009 naval skirmish with South, which then led to this Cheonan attack in 2010. So, you know, it's not that they're also going to respond right away. They could buy some time as well. So we don't know exactly. It is coming, but we don't know exactly what or when. But I do feel like they have to make good on their threat and do something.
So the fact that we're having this conversation, Sumi Terry, about we both agree that something's going to happen between the North and the South. So surely the Chinese know this too. So what kind of dialogue's going on between the Chinese and the North Koreans? If China is good to its word, where it wants to de-escalate tensions on the peninsula, not escalate them.
Right. No, I'm sure China is trying to talk to the North Koreans as well as there. I know that Xi Jinping just spoke to South Korean president. I'm sure Xi Jinping also spoke to President Obama. We're all talking to China. Now, China's response is kind of interesting because there were some intriguing signs that China was sort of being helpful and they were backing away from this, you know, don't ever criticize North Korea thing, and they were on board with a UN Security Council resolution, and they criticized North Korea and so on. But we just don't know, you know, how strongly they plan to implement the sanctions and really squeeze North Korea. Now, if something happens between North and South in terms of any kind of attack, China will blame South Korea and us, United States, for, you know, it's because you guys were, you know, this exercises that we're joint exercises that we are engaged in right now, that we provoke North Korea and so on. But I'm sure they are trying to de-escalate the situation and trying to talk to North Koreans. The question is Kim Jong-un listening? Because Kim Jong-un did not listen and he did follow through with a missile test and another nuclear test just recently.
So what will this do then, assuming an incident takes place either soon or, as you say, there were 4 months between the last time that North Korea felt it was provoked and when it struck at the South. What does this do, though, for President Obama's policy of strategic patience with North Korea?
Well, you know, I don't think President Obama has too many options here. I think he will just sort of stick with this until things calm down, because it's not like he can now go back to the North Koreans in the midst of all this and say, yes, let's get back to talks. It's just not going to happen. So everything has to calm down for a certain period of time. There has to be some sort of peace and no heightening of tensions for us to even consider it. You know, I know President Obama has been criticized for the policy, for having sort of a non-policy. Some people criticize strategic patience as a non-policy. But it is a policy. Both President Clinton and President Bush, at least in the second term, had a turnaround policy. President Bush started as more of a hardliner, but his policy really changed in the second term and engaged with North Korea and held talks with North Korea. But that didn't really got us much either. I think President Obama's policy is not going to change all that much. He just has to sort of stick with this. For now. As you know, and you've heard this many times before by Korea watchers, North Korea is just a land of bad options. There's just no good option when it comes to North Korea. But I think for now, he will just have to stick with this strategic patience policy.
Well, just in closing then, Sumi Terry, the pattern is pretty clear that the North behaves like a delinquent child, and nobody can really punish the North because they've had sanctions forever, and it's still, the regime still stays in place, and they're isolated more than ever, and the regime still stays in place. And they basically have created a dynamic where they get rewarded for bad behavior. So do you foresee this dynamic ever changing, or will it require everybody just having to swallow their pride and recognize the regime?
This dynamic, unfortunately, has been in place for the last couple of decades. It will stay in place until we make a drastic decision and do something. Either engage North Korea, as you said, swallow our pride, go back and really talk to them, and this, or you know, more of a kinetic action. But it's otherwise, until you make this very difficult choice, and neither option is a good option, obviously. You know, but unless we choose one, you know, to follow one path, I'm afraid this is sort of going to be the pattern. It has been the pattern, and it will continue to be a pattern. Well, something has to drastically change, and it's not going to be North Korea. It has to be a decision made by Washington and South Korea.
Well, Sumi Terry, I thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Sumi Terry, who's a senior research scholar at the Weatherhead East Asia Institute at Columbia University and the managing director at Gerson Global Advisors. Previously, she was a National Intelligence Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, the former Deputy National Intelligence Officer for East Asia at the National Intelligence Council, and the Director of Japan, Korea, and Oceanic Affairs at the National Security Council. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the rentier capitalism, as our next guest describes modern American capitalism.
feel just like a child. Yeah, I feel just like a child. Well, I feel just like a child. Well, I feel just like a child. From my womb to my tomb, I guess I'll always be a child.